The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Scott Heath for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Access Film. Each month, we'll not only give you the latest film news, but we'll discuss the intersection of film and accessibility, plus take a look at the history and current state of filmmaking in North Carolina. Now let's get to the news. I'll be reading from Variety, Deadline, The Hollywood Reporter, and The New York Times. June 12, 2026. Justice Department approves Paramount's Warner Brothers Discovery takeover without any strings attached. David Ellison's Paramount Skydance has cleared a big regulatory hurdle in advancing toward completing its $111 billion merger with Warner Brothers Discovery, although it's still not a done deal and could face other legal challenges. The Justice Department's antitrust division has approved the deal, Variety has confirmed. As first reported by Politico, the regulator is giving the green light to the Paramount WBD tie-up without requiring any divestitures, behavioral remedies, or concessions. There's been major backlash in the industry to the megadeal, which would bring together Paramount assets including CBS, CBS News, Paramount Pictures, and Paramount Plus, with WBD's HBO and HBO Max, Warner Brothers Pictures, CNN, TNT, TBS, HGTV, and more. Paramount execs have said they anticipate achieving more than $6 billion in cost savings through the merger, indicating big layoffs would ensue. To date, more than 5,500 filmmakers, actors, and other Hollywood professionals have signed an open letter opposing the deal, arguing that it would eliminate jobs, raise prices, and reduce competition. Organizers of the BlockTheMerger.com open letter include the Writers Guild of America. Individual signatories include Florence Pugh, Pedro Pascal, Edward Norton, Joaquin Phoenix, Ben Stiller, Kristen Stewart, Mark Ruffalo, Noah Wiley, Rami Youssef, Rosario Dawson, Rosie O'Donnell, Ted Danson, Tiffany Haddish, Yorgos Lanthimos, and Robert De Niro. The Teamsters urged the DOJ to block the Paramount WBD deal unless Paramount agreed to substantial and enforceable safeguards against job cuts and committed to supporting increased U.S. production. In March, the acting head of the Justice Department's antitrust division, Omid Assefi, said the Paramount WBD deal would absolutely not be on a fast track for approval due to political reasons, in the context of the Ellison family's friendly ties to Trump. On Friday, the DOJ's antitrust division said that its rigorous eight-month investigation was led by the division's career staff and included the production of more than 2 million documents from more than 80 parties. The division's mandate was to investigate and, if necessary, litigate proposed mergers that harm competition or American consumers, the division said. This investigation included a review of reams of documentary evidence, hours of deposition testimony of senior-level executives, interviews with third-party witnesses, and staff-led meetings with the parties themselves. These investigative efforts all led to the same conclusion. The film and television industry is highly dynamic, and the proposed transaction is not likely to harm competition or American consumers. Paramount Skydance said in a statement Friday, "We are grateful for the Department of Justice's thorough review of this transaction, as well as the work of the other agencies that have completed their reviews and provided clearance to date. This deal is pro-competitive, resulting in a stronger company better positioned to compete against dominant technology platforms in an industry increasingly defined by intense competition for audiences, talent, technology, and investment. We remain focused on completing the transaction as soon as possible and delivering its benefits to consumers, creators, and the entertainment industry as a whole." Paramount still faces other potential roadblocks to closing the WBD deal. Among those, state attorneys general, including California's Rob Bonta, have said that they will potentially move forward with litigation seeking to block the Paramount WBD merger on antitrust grounds. Regarding the DOJ's approval of the deal, Senator Elizabeth Warren, Democrat of Massachusetts, said in a statement, "This is terrible news for every American who doesn't want Trump-aligned billionaires to control what they watch and how much they pay." The Paramount-Warner Brothers deal has reeked of corruption and influence peddling. This fight isn't over. State AGs must block this merger. Meanwhile, Paramount's proposed WBD deal is undergoing regulatory review in Europe and the UK. The European Commission is investigating the deal under the EU's Foreign Subsidies Regulation, looking at the approximately $24 billion being fronted for the takeover by the sovereign wealth funds of Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and Abu Dhabi. The EU set a provisional July 14th deadline for vetting the deal under the law, according to a notice posted on the regulatory agency site. That's in addition to its investigation under standard merger rules with a July 7th deadline. On Tuesday, June 9th, the UK's competition regulator, the Competition and Markets Authority, said it initiated an investigation into the proposed Paramount WBD deal. Warren is among U.S. Democrats who have called on the Trump administration to review the foreign investments behind the Paramount WBD deal, including urging the FCC and the Treasury Department to initiate such reviews. But to date, there has been no indication that any U.S. government entity will do so. In communications with the DOJ, Paramount Chief Legal Officer Makan Delrahim alleged that Netflix had been strongly lobbying regulators against Paramount's WBD deal. Netflix clinched a deal to buy Warner Brothers streaming and studio businesses in December 2025, before backing out of the bidding in February after Paramount upped its takeout offer for all of WBD. Netflix's panic-level response and scorched-earth campaign to try and poison regulators and other stakeholders against the transaction shows just how seriously Netflix takes Paramount as a scaled competitor, Delrahim wrote in a June 5 letter to officials in DOJ's antitrust division. About Delrahim's comments, a Netflix spokesperson said, "These claims from Paramount Skydance are absurd. We walked away from this deal months ago and remain focused on our own business, not theirs. Ultimately, it's up to the regulators to approve this deal and determine if it is in the best interest of the industry and all concerned." Separately, Delrahim said in an interview with the Los Angeles Times last week that there is, quote, "a lot of fear-mongering, particularly from people in Washington, D.C. They are running a political campaign. Some of these people are trying to inflict harm on this transaction really because of their own anti-Semitic views." Delrahim has not identified which opponents of the Paramount WBD merger allegedly hold, quote, "anti-Semitic views." June 4th, 2026. Christopher Nolan's The Odyssey earns R rating. Teens and tweens hoping to find out if Odysseus makes it home to Ithaca are going to need to bring a parent or adult guardian to the multiplex. The Odyssey, Christopher Nolan's sprawling adaptation of Homer's epic poem, has been rated R by the Motion Picture Association. It's unclear why the picture got this designation. We're guessing some Cyclops carnage and body count heavy battles? It's unusual for a summer blockbuster to carry an R rating lately. Studios typically try to have their action-heavy adventures earn PG-13 or PG ratings so they can play to the broadest audience possible. However, Nolan's last film, Oppenheimer, also had an R rating and was released in the heart of summer. It went on to gross nearly $1 billion at the global box office. Other Nolan summer films like Inception, Dunkirk, Tenet, and the Dark Knight trilogy all received PG-13 ratings. Universal, which partnered with Nolan on Oppenheimer, is distributing The Odyssey. It opens on July 17th, a summer stretch where many of the director's films have found success. The Odyssey reportedly carries a budget of $250 million, so it will need to bring in the crowds. It ranks as perhaps the most expensive R-rated movie in history, topping the likes of Joker, Folie à Deux, and Deadpool and Wolverine. In addition to Nolan, one of the biggest names in movies, the cast includes Matt Damon, Tom Holland, Zendaya, Robert Pattinson, and Anne Hathaway. Exhibitors believe The Odyssey will be one of the summer's biggest films. Tickets for IMAX 70mm screenings went on sale last year and quickly sold out, while demand Thursday morning as tickets went on sale led to long waits for online ticketing. That's a sign of Nolan's commercial firepower and the excitement to see how he tops the Oscar-winning Oppenheimer. From Deadline, June 16, 2026. The Rocky Horror Picture Show sets 2027 run at Sphere as Wizard of Oz passes $400 million in sales. A new version of the Rocky Horror Picture Show is heading to Sphere in Las Vegas in 2027. Sphere Entertainment announced the booking Tuesday. At the same time, it revealed that its version of The Wizard of Oz, which premiered last August, has now sold more than 3 million tickets, raking in $400 million. Jim Dolan, executive chairman and CEO of Sphere Entertainment, said the project is part of Sphere Studios' development of original experiences, purpose-built for the massive site. The titles push the boundaries of technology and storytelling for this new medium, while always keeping the audience at the center of the experience. Since the Rocky Horror Picture Show premiered in 1975, it redefined audience participation and became a cultural phenomenon. With Sphere, we have the opportunity to take that spirit of immersion to an entirely new level. It wasn't immediately clear from the company's brief announcement how different the 2027 Rocky Horror will be from the midnight screening staple that has drawn crowds at repertory houses worldwide for decades. In the case of Oz, a team of producers and AI specialists produced an entirely new version of the 1939 classic, tailoring it to the unique dimensions and fidelity of Sphere. Audiences and technophiles have been wowed, but film purists have howled over the trimming of more than 25 minutes of runtime, including some musical numbers. The pipeline for higher-priced, lavishly produced fare playing in bespoke venues has been starting to fill as IP holders and venue operators look to tap into surging demand for in-person experiences. Along with Sphere, which has delivered strong concert ticket sales for musical acts like the Backstreet Boys and Phish, IMAX has been breaking records and attracting corporate acquisition interest. Formats like 4DX and ScreenX are surging, and startup, quote, shared reality purveyor, Cosm, has joined forces with Warner Brothers for a string of well-attended presentations of library titles like The Matrix and the first Harry Potter film. The audience participation elements of the Rocky Horror story have helped keep it alive across generations. While it may not be part of the film canon exactly, it is a pop culture mainstay that helped launch Tim Curry, Susan Sarandon, Barry Bostwick, and Meatloaf to wider fame. A Broadway adaptation premiered earlier this year and extended its run after strong box office returns. June 13, 2026. Disclosure Day touches down with $44 million opening. Obsession defies gravity in week 5. The original summer movie filmmaker met the new generation of directors this weekend, with Steven Spielberg's Disclosure Day entering the fray amid a summer dominated by Gen Z hits Obsession and Backrooms. Spielberg's $115 million budgeted UFO will land at around $44 million domestically and $93 million globally this weekend. A solid start for the filmmaker's first popcorn movie in 8 years, since he released Ready Player One to $53.7 million in North America on its way to $583.5 million globally. It will become Spielberg's top-grossing opening weekend domestically for an original feature, as well as his company Amblin's biggest original opening. The film is appealing to older audiences, with 59% over 35, while 57% of the audience is male. The Oscar-winning filmmaker conceived of the story and then handed it off to his Jurassic Park screenwriter David Cope to pen the sci-fi thriller about the race to reveal that extraterrestrial life is among us. Emily Blunt and Josh O'Connor are among the cast, with critics granting it strong reviews and audiences giving it a B cinema score. Curry Barker's word-of-mouth hit Obsession continues to breathe rarefied air at the box office and is expected to bring in $19 million in its fifth weekend, declining just 25%. It will hit number 2 and is the rare movie to have 4 consecutive weekends bigger than the opening weekend at $17.2 million. The feature has broken numerous records for Focus, including becoming its biggest movie domestically and globally for the studio. It looks to end the weekend with a domestic haul of $188.3 million. In international markets, Obsession is pacing ahead of horror hits such as Weapons, Nosferatu, and Sinners at the same points in their lifespans. It is expected to end the weekend with $77.5 million internationally for a global haul of $265.8 million. Paramount holdover Scary Movie is expected to hit number 3 in its second weekend, with around $115 million and a decline of around 70%. While Kane Parsons' Gen Z hit Backrooms is bringing in $11.2 million in its third weekend to bring its domestic haul to a hefty $160 million. Globally, it will end the weekend at $262.3 million. The A24 film costs just $10 million to produce and is based on Parsons' series of viral YouTube shorts. Amazon MGM Studios' Masters of the Universe is a non-factor in its second weekend, where the pricey adaptation of the Gen X favorite is expected to gross $9.2 million, declining 69%. Michael, meanwhile, continued its record-breaking run, with Lionsgate's Michael Jackson film becoming the top-grossing biopic of all time in recent days, adding $4.6 million to its domestic haul this weekend, with its global tally topping the $911 million collected by Queen biopic Bohemian Rhapsody. June 12, 2026. Aaron Sorkin on why Jesse Eisenberg didn't return as Mark Zuckerberg for Social Reckoning, quote, has his problems with the guy. Aaron Sorkin is revealing the reason why Jesse Eisenberg declined to reprise his role as Mark Zuckerberg in The Social Reckoning. During a recent interview with Vanity Fair, Sorkin, who penned the 2010 Oscar-winning film The Social Network and wrote and directed the upcoming sequel, shared that he spent 3 days trying to convince Eisenberg to return for the follow-up pick. I felt like it belonged to him, and he was certainly battle-tested, he said. The A Real Pain actor-director earned an Oscar nomination for Best Lead Actor for his portrayal of the Facebook founder in The Social Network. However, the actor couldn't be persuaded. He simply did not want to be conflated with Mark Zuckerberg anymore, that he has his problems with the guy, Sorkin explained. He doesn't like kids coming up to him in airports with business cards that say, I'm CEO, bitch, for him to sign. Last year, when asked why he wasn't returning for the second film, Eisenberg said on the Today Show, listen, for reasons that have nothing to do with how amazing that movie will be, really, truthfully, but when you play a character, you feel, at some point, you've grown into something else. Jeremy Strong has since taken over the leading role in The Social Reckoning, which just released its first trailer. Vanity Fair reported that the filmmaker first mentioned the sequel script to Eisenberg at the 2025 Vanity Fair Oscar party, which is where he also ran into Strong. It was in that moment that the apprentice actor pitched himself for the role of Zuckerberg if Eisenberg declined. Once filming began, Sorkin said the Succession actor followed his lead. He showed up on his first day, and when he said good morning to me, he was already talking like Mark. The Social Reckoning, also starring Jeremy Allen White, Mikey Madison, Betty Gilpin, and Patrick Fischler, hits theaters on October 9th. Access Film's mission is to discuss the intersection of film and accessibility, as well as the current state and history of filmmaking in North Carolina. So today, I'd like to mention a film I enjoyed seeing a few weeks back. It's called Tuner, and to sum it up, it's about a piano tuner with a rare hearing condition called hyperacusis, in which everyday sounds may seem unbearably loud and even painful. This particular piano tuner falls on hard times and must use his rare hearing condition to crack safes for a band of thieves. How about we give the trailer a listen?
I'm just a piano tuner, man.
Yes, ma'am.
The toilet's leaking. I'll give you an extra 100.
What'd she say?
She wants us to fix the toilet.
We're piano tuners. We fix pianos.
200.
500, we'll talk.
Harry Horwitz is piano tune and repair. This is Nicky. He is my apprentice. He has a hearing condition, but believe it or not, he's a virtuoso.
Virtuoso, huh?
Maybe you can inspire him.
Okay, thank you, Harry.
Close your eyes. What's this?
C, F sharp. E7 flat 9. F sharp, G, A sharp, B over D sharp.
You ever take those out?
No.
I get hyperacusis. I'm allergic to loud noises.
Hello? You know how long you're gonna be? It's loud.
As long as it takes. Unless you can open the safe. If you want to make real money, give me a call.
Harry Horwitz.
The outstanding balance is $36,000.
Where are you going to get all the money?
I'll figure it out. I got you something.
Don't do anything stupid. Do you understand?
Who are you?
Hey!
Forget it. I'm done.
Harry, you're a very special man. And your girlfriend, she has beautiful hands.
What happened to you, Tuna?
Open the safe. Open the safe. Open the safe.
I was just a piano tuner, man.
To quote an article from The Hollywood Reporter from May 21st, in 2023, filmmaker Daniel Rohr, director of Tuner, at just 29, accepted an Oscar for his documentary, Navalny. He'd seemingly punched his ticket for the rest of his career, but then he unexpectedly found himself in a paralyzing creative standstill. The Canadian writer-director felt a corresponding anxiety that made him ponder the terrifying question of whether he'd ever be able to create again. Fortunately, an introduction to Los Angeles-based piano tuner Peter White got the ball rolling on what would become Tuner, Rohr's narrative feature debut. He shadowed White throughout the day-to-day, and that experience, combined with his lingering self-doubt, resulted in the character of Nicky White, a.k.a. the protagonist of the film. So I originally saw this film at the suggestion of a friend and Raleigh-based muralist, Taylor White, who's the sister of Peter White, the real-life piano tuner who inspired Rohr to create this film. I'd like to give you a more in-depth review of Tuner, so here's a May 21st review from the New York Times by Brandon Yu. Tuner Review, Harmonies, Heists, and Hurt. Early on in Tuner, there's a moment when Nicky, Leo Woodall, a piano tuner on the job, meets Ruthie, Havana Rose Liu, a conservatory student, and wearily displays the true extent of his powers. Rolling up his toolkit, he reveals a pitch-perfect ear and reluctantly rattles off the identity of each of the increasingly complex chords Ruthie strikes on the piano keys. Call it a piano man's goodwill hunting. Instead of a math genius in the guise of a brawling janitor, we have a secret musical virtuoso. A derivative moment like this shouldn't really work as well as it does. Shouldn't feel as satisfying because of its predictability, if not for the prettily bruised charisma of Woodall. His turn in Tuner, co-written and directed by Daniel Rohr, makes a strong case for him as one of Hollywood's most promising rising stars, but not so much in the vein of a young Matt Damon. Instead, you'll find a particular performative quality to Woodall's allure that is reminiscent of a different star, Brad Pitt. That sounds out of left field, a baby-faced hunk with sensitive eyes. Woodall does not embody a chiseled mold or megawatt shine. Rather, he possesses that constant but subtle affected charm of facial expression. Pitt is keenly aware of the raw power of his face reacting to the smallest of things. Only it doesn't feel affected because he exudes and manipulates it so naturally. Woodall, in other words, is magnetic when he simply listens. That's important here, as Nicky spends a lot of time listening, first as a piano tuner working alongside his fatherly boss, Harry, played by Dustin Hoffman, then as a safecracker after he unwittingly gets involved with a gang of thieves who make use of his skills. He lives with hyperacusis, a rare condition that makes most sounds incredibly painful to him. Nicky, once a piano prodigy, was driven away from music because it had become unendurable. That particular past leads him to a connection with Ruthie. This is, if it isn't clear already, a somewhat strange creature of a film, balancing an armload of genres, a New York City romance, briefly a buddy movie with Hoffman, a heist movie, and a drama about pained artistry. That it doesn't feel awkwardly cobbled together, but is instead vibrant and breezy, is a credit to Woodall's grounded charisma, but also to the chemistry he finds with Liu and Hoffman and to Rohr's punchlines as a director. An Oscar-winning documentarian who has explored solemn subjects in films including Navalny and the AI Doc. Rohr has made a smooth jump to a narrative debut whose tone can feel unexpected, with a pleasing photographic eye, good sound design, and a colorful approach to editing. He has uplifted genre elements that often seem stale in the streaming era. Still, the film does buckle under the weight of its many ideas. Eventually, it strains to improbable lengths to reach a dramatic conclusion that you know it's been waiting to whip out of its back pocket. It's a little silly, and yet, watching Woodall finally let loose, then snap back into his sly and sexy cool, you can't help but be lulled into the melody. Tuner is a New York Times critic's pick. It's rated R for language throughout, some violence, drug use, and brief nudity. Running time is 1 hour 49 minutes. Tuner has been in theaters for a few weeks now, but you can still see it in North Carolina at AMC South Point 17 in Durham and the Chelsea Theater in Chapel Hill. It may also be in your area if you're outside of these two cities, so check your local listings in case it's still available. As some of you may know, North Carolina has a wide variety of film festivals across the state. So now why don't we take a look at upcoming festivals where you can check out lots of indie films from across the state and across the world, and also a variety of deadlines for filmmakers out there who wish to submit their films to the NC film festivals. Okay, so first up, folks interested in seeing films can attend the following festivals between now and the end of July. So we have the Lumbee Film Festival in Pembroke, North Carolina, on July 4th. The Congregate Film Festival of Greensboro is July 17th through the 19th. And Reel to Reel Film Festival is in Kings Mountain and runs July 22nd to the 25th. Now for you filmmakers out there, here's a list of upcoming late submission deadlines. So in this case, these festivals have already accepted submissions at an earlier date, but they have late or extended deadlines in which you can still submit your film. So first up, the Congregate Film Festival I mentioned earlier in Greensboro is accepting submissions through June 19th. Kookaloras Film Festival of Wilmington accepts through June 29th. Music Video Asheville Fest, the Charlotte Film Festival, and the Raleigh Film and Art Festival are all taking film submissions through June 30th. The Asheville Film Festival's late deadline is July 1st. Tryon International Film Festival of Tryon, North Carolina is July 15th. Wreak Havoc Film Festival of Winston-Salem is July 20th. The Cine Odyssey Animation Festival is through July 27th. And both the Indigo Moon Festival of Fayetteville and the Out at the Movies International Film Festival of Winston-Salem are accepting late submissions through July 31st. And then finally, for regular deadlines, so for these festivals, this is their first deadline. Often these have extended deadlines, but it's always good to get it in that regular deadline since you're competing against other filmmakers. So I'll be rattling off a bunch of film festivals that will carry us through the month of August. The Beaufort Film Festival is accepting regular submissions through July 1st. Horror Movie Freaks Film Festival of Walnut Cove accepts through July 4th. The First Cut Horror Film Festival in Wilmington is July 11th. Halloween International Film Festival of Outer Banks is July 13th. Bull City International Film Festival and Screenwriting Competition in Durham is July 15th. Gutter Bliss Film Festival of Wilmington is July 25th. Stranger Days Independent Film Festival in Charlotte is July 31st. Twin Rivers Media Festival of Asheville is August 1st. And Fuquay Film Fest in Fuquay Varina is August 15th. Festival information may be subject to change, so please verify these dates. You can find them and more at filmnc.com/film-festivals. Film NC's page is an aggregator of the many festivals across North Carolina, so be sure to check each festival's website in case dates have changed. And best of luck to all you filmmakers out there. We've run out of time for today's episode of Access Film. We hope you enjoyed listening. Please join us next time. I'm Scott Heath, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Access Film is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.